Let's get back to our top story, the situation with Iran. I spoke today with Chuck Hagel, former Republican senator and Secretary of Defense under President Obama, and I began by asking him if he thought President Trump's decision to kill Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was a mistake.
Well, I have not seen the intelligence, obviously, but yes, Soleimani was an enemy of the United States, was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of Americans. At the same time, there's always a smart way and a not-so-smart way to deal with these things. And I'm not sure, from what I've seen the last few days, this administration had any strategy. Where's this going? What about second and third-order consequences? So, we'll see how this plays out. But right now, it looks like Iran is the big winner. I mean, go to the Iraqi parliament's actions yesterday, voting to expel the United States from Iraq. If that occurs, that's a huge defeat for us and a big win for Iran. I mean, that has consequences all over the Middle East. ISIS and all our other allies in the Middle East would be affected by that. So that's the way I would answer your question.
Well, did you ever consider killing Soleimani when you were Secretary of Defense? Because it's been reported that this has been something that's been thought of for many years, but nobody's ever actually done it.
Well, you always have contingencies and options, especially on people with profiles like Soleimani. But again, those contingencies and options have to be thought through and carefully analyzed. There's no guarantee in anything you do. First of all, you want some specific strategy behind it. What is really the purpose other than just killing the guy? And it always should fit into what I think is a diplomatic strategic objective. If it doesn't fit that diplomatic strategic objective, then I think it's very questionable whether you do it or not.
Well, the Trump administration would say that the objective was to stop Soleimani from killing any more Americans.
Well, then I heard Secretary Pompeo say yesterday the objective was deterrence. So which is it? And we haven't seen the intelligence. Now, I'm probably not going to see it, but members of Congress, I saw Adam Schiff, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, on television yesterday, and he said it doesn't live up to the administration's claim. So we need a lot more clarity on this, and that's another aspect of this. The Congress is completely vacant in this. And that's not the way the Constitution is supposed to work. That's not the way it does work. Article 1 of the Constitution is the Congress. It's supposed to be three co-equal branches of government.
Well, if Congress, as expected, votes this week, the House anyway, on a resolution to limit President Trump's ability to conduct military action against Iran, is that the right approach, do you think, on the part of the House?
Well, I've been one who has favored for many years bringing up the use of military force resolution that we passed back in 2001, and then we amended it somewhat in 2002. We've got to renew that because it is so wide open now, and it's not even relevant to today, 2020. So I've been in favor of Senator Kaine and others' resolutions to update that use of military force to bring the Congress more into it.
Well, do you think that the killing of Soleimani was legal?
Well, it depends on what your interpretation is. Now, the United Nations has said it was a violation of human rights. He was a member of a foreign nation, sovereign nation's government. Baghdadi and all the rest were terrorists. And so the United Nations already said it was illegal. He's an enemy of the United States. I mean, there is a strong case to be made for that. But the point is that it was a targeted hit. Very targeted. Plus, the other part of this that doesn't get a lot of attention, it's getting attention in Iraq, and that is the other general that was killed alongside Soleimani, an Iraqi. The United States is supposed to abide by the agreement it has with the Iraqi government, that the Iraqi government would sign off on any combat actions and missions that the United States would take. Well, that obviously didn't occur.
The Trump administration has said that they want to de-escalate the situation. What would you advise if the goal is to de-escalate the situation?
Well, I know what they've said about de-escalation, but I don't see in their words or deeds any de-escalation. I see nothing but escalation. I mean, you're sending more than 4,000 more troops over there. You've been sending thousands more last year. I mean, that's not de-escalation. One of the things you could do to de-escalate is for the president to stop tweeting and talking about we're going to hit 52 Iranian sites, some of them cultural, historical cultural events, which would, in fact, would be illegal. And stop baiting the Iranians like that, that'd be a good start.
Let's talk about what is going on in Iraq right now. President Trump said the U.S. would put very big sanctions on Iraq if the country follows through with that vote yesterday and actually forces out U.S. troops. What do you think that this unfolding situation means for the future of Iraq?
Well, again, it goes back to my original question. So far, the last few days, how have we won here? What have been the victories that we've achieved by killing Soleimani? It's just the opposite. So now we're in a contest against Iraq, supposedly one of our allies that we have propped up since we invaded and occupied in 2003, which really was the beginning of all this fiasco in the Middle East. But I don't know. I don't know how the president makes his decisions. I don't know if they're on a whim or he gets up in the morning and he just tweets it and this is the way it's going to be. I know Secretary Pompeo and others have said, no, there's strategy behind it and we've been meeting. But from what I know, and I've been told by people who do know something about it, he makes his own decisions. I mean, he'll listen to other people, but that doesn't make any difference. He'll make his own decision. He, as he's often said himself, I go with my own gut. I trust my gut more. And also, as he said before, I know more than my generals and I know more than my intelligence people. Well, if he really believes that and he's acting that out, that's pretty dangerous.
You were Secretary of Defense during the rise of ISIS. What do you think of the news that American forces in Iraq and Syria are stopping their campaign against ISIS because they have to prepare for possible retaliation from Iran?
Well, this is a direct result of what the president ordered in the killing of Soleimani. If that would not have been the case, he wouldn't then have had to make these decisions to pull back on going after ISIS. It just so convoluted the whole process. So now we're pulling back on our real, clear, vital enemy, the vital enemy of nations in the Middle East, and going and helping them go after ISIS. And what have we achieved with that?
Secretary Hagel, if you were defense secretary today, what would be your top concerns when it comes to the revenge that Iran has vowed after the killing of Soleimani?
Well, Iran possesses significant asymmetric weapons, meaning it's got its Quds forces, its Revolutionary Guard, Hezbollah, popular majority, militia forces, Shia militia forces all over the Middle East, and they have significant cyber capability, and that's probably as big a threat as anything. You've got the Persian Gulf, where so much commerce and oil come down through that narrow Straits of Hormuz. They've got capabilities there with their navy. I mean, it is presenting the Defense Department a lot of big challenges because of all those asymmetric capabilities that Iran possesses. They can hit really in any location at any time by different means. I don't know what the Iranians will do. They say they're going to do something, but we've got to be prepared for anything. And then that means, of course, we had to evacuate all of Americans, told them to get out of Iraq. We're taking many of our people in the embassy and evacuating them as well. We're on high alert all over the Middle East. American civilians, American business are all targets, of course. Now, I know Iran has said that we're going to hit military facilities, but I wouldn't bet on that 100%. So it's a big problem.
Well, and the U.S. has already sent thousands more troops over to Kuwait. Do you expect more U.S. troops will have to go to the region?
Could be, depending if this escalates in any significant way. And both sides are, I know they're saying we want to de-escalate and we don't want war, both sides are saying, but their actions are saying something different. So we could see more troops.
Well, that's the question. I mean, if Iran does retaliate, as they are saying that they will, wouldn't the U.S. have to then retaliate for the retaliation?
Well, I suppose we would. And that's how World War I started. And you go back into the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution that really started the Vietnam War in 1964. President Bush and his administration telling the Congress and the American people that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction and we have to stop that, which now we know he didn't. That was untrue. Yes, that's right. It always, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Let's talk about the Iran nuclear deal, because that's a big part of this, too. And you were, of course, part of putting that together. And Iran now says it's ending its commitments to that deal in light of the killing of Soleimani. What do you make of that? And do you think there's any way to get diplomacy with Iran back on track at this point?
Well, I hope so. The 2015 nuclear agreement was a very significant agreement because, one thing, it started to stabilize things in the Middle East. It didn't end all the hostilities, of course, but at least it started us down a road of de-escalation and down a road where we could build some trust with all the nations and Iran. Let's remember, the people who signed that agreement were all the great powers, China, Russia, all our Western allies, NATO, United Nations, United States. That was significant. And we stopped the centrifuge production. And it was a big deal. For the first time, it put United States inspectors inside Iran on the ground in those facilities. So it was a good step forward, and it helped stabilize some of the relationship. So when the president pulled us out of that agreement, what was interesting, all of our European allies stayed in it. We isolated ourselves. The president isolated the United States in that agreement. Every other signatory to that agreement stayed in it and told us that was a mistake. Well, then we put significant sanctions on Iran and started hitting Iran hard economically, diplomatically, and other ways. And then now with this event that killed Soleimani, that kind of just capped it off. So the Iranians say, there's no way we're going to make this work, and we're going to just start the centrifuges up again. I understand that. That's predictable. So we've got a bigger problem than we had a week ago.
Well, and the Trump administration would say, and they have said, that they thought it was a very bad deal and that it only dealt with the nuclear issue and not with the fact that Iran was, through surrogates in parts of the region, attacking U.S. interests and that the deal didn't cover that.
That's true. But it dealt with the most significant threat that we all felt, we being not just the United States, but our allies, NATO allies, actually China and Russia also, the nuclear capability that Iran was starting to possess. Iran was not going to deal with the other two issues that you just mentioned. They agreed to the nuclear deal. What this would do and was doing was building, as I've said, some amount of trust between all the countries to start dealing with the other components of the problems that we've been dealing with Iran, the terrorism, and the mischief that they've been making in Lebanon and everywhere else, and their missile component. And so we were moving toward dealing with those. Now we have no base to work from. Now we have no platform to try to fix some of these other problems and address those. In diplomacy on these big issues, it doesn't come in neat little boxes. Well, let's take all three of the big issues and we'll negotiate them, and then we'll come up with an agreement. It doesn't work that way. I wish it would, but it doesn't work that way. And I think the efforts that were made by John Kerry and Ernie Moniz, Secretary of Energy, the president, and others who were involved there was very significant.
I finally want to bring this back to Washington because the Senate comes back this week and was supposed to start its impeachment trial within days. Do you think that trial should go ahead as planned?
Well, I think it has to. I mean, we're the greatest nation on earth. Come on. We can't walk and chew gum at the same time. I mean, impeachment is a big deal. This president was impeached. Now, I know a lot of people don't like it, don't like the way it was done, but it was done legally, lawfully, within the boundaries of the Constitution. He was impeached. So the next step, that didn't mean he was convicted, but the next step is then to try that impeachment in the Senate. I don't think you can be you can stop these things. I mean, again, that's a victory for Iran. I mean, I think the rest of the world would look at us and laugh that as great a nation as we are, we can't do a couple of things at the same time. We can't govern our own country internally at the same time we can deal with foreign policy issues and national security issues. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous to even be talking about it.
Well, do you think that the Iran situation changes the calculation for Republicans who were thinking about voting to allow witnesses to testify in a trial?
I don't think it should. I don't see how it should. The two articles the president was impeached on have nothing to do with Iran. And I think the witnesses that I think should be called, they, I mean, that's what a trial is about. Witnesses, so that the senators, the jurors, can listen to the evidence, the real evidence on both sides, and then make a decision whether you think the president should be exonerated or convicted. So I don't think it has anything to do with this.
That is Chuck Hagel, a former Republican senator from Nebraska and former Secretary of Defense under President Obama. Secretary Hagel, thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.